300, and I'm Stefan Christoph. On the broadcast this week, a conversation with André Penchado. André speaks about his work, both as an educator, but also as a visual artist photographer in Brazil. I think it's a valuable conversation for a couple of reasons. The first is it really depicts a voice thinking about the textures of Brazilian society today. A very important, space that has seen a lot of contestation towards the Trump version of Western culture and economics under the present government of Lula da Silva. André, as an artist, I think speaks to the layered thoughtfulness of a lot of Brazilian artists today. He speaks about a number of projects, including efforts to explore and address more contentious elements of Brazilian history, including uprisings in the north of enslaved communities not far from the city of Belém. It was really a pleasure to speak with André about his work as a photographer today in Brazil for Free City Radio. Here's our exchange. Documenting social life and sort of the textural realities of Brazil today is, as always, could require a multitude. André, your photography really speaks to the broad diversity of textures that make up Brazilian life. And you're based in Sao Paulo, but of course, the country itself is massive, and I think also lends itself and creates an opening really that speaks to photography because of how diverse the textures and terrains and also society is. Like the social life even in your city is radically different neighborhood to neighborhood. We can get into some of your specific projects, but maybe first can you just introduce yourself and maybe share a little bit of a window into your photography practice. You also are an educator.
Well, my name is André Penchado. I'm a 54-year-old visual artist based in São Paulo. I work primarily in photography and video. I've been working in photography. Firstly, I was a commercial photographer for a long time. So I was a commercial photographer from 1998 until 2013, roughly. But from 2010 onwards, I became more interested in developing my own projects, and then I quite left commercial photography, and I've been doing that since then. And then also 8 years ago I started teaching, but you know, when I talk about teaching with people that live in the US or in Canada, people always ask if I teach in a university or something like that, but it's not what I do. I just have groups in my studio in São Paulo, people that want to develop projects in photography, that like the kind of work I do. So for instance, in this semester, I have 45 people in different groups, in different formats, that come to my place or do it online, where I share basically my experience and my way of working with them, and then I guide them through the development of their own projects. If I want to talk about kind of photography I do, it's interesting that you mentioned that I do have different styles, and this is true. I love photography as a medium, and I think about the style I'm going to use for a project depending on the idea of the project, the concept for the project. So it changes. As a commercial photographer, I practice lots of different types of photography, you know, so, and I use that in my practice. As I haven't studied photography properly, I'm self-taught. I went to business school, and I also did social science. And actually, it wasn't business school because it was management school for the state, if you want to work as a civil servant. So it's a kind of school for that. I don't know how to call that properly in English, but it's within the business school, but it was a management school. And I I love the way photography, because you've been saying things about the texture of Brazil, and it's interesting also because I love the way photography records the surface of the world. I think photography has this kind of complexity where it records the surface of the world in its minimum detail, at least the kind of photography I do many times, you know, like direct straight photography. But regardless of that, there's a void of meaning in it if you don't know what's been photographed, if you don't know the story behind it, if you don't know the people in the photo. You don't get almost anything, you know. You can describe the person, you can describe the place, but you actually don't know anything. So it's a complex medium, right? Because it says a lot without saying anything many times. And I like this in my work, so I try to create many times visual... I like to use photography to investigate facts of Brazilian history, and also facts that happen in my personal life, but I think that they can resonate in society. For instance, the loss of my father to suicide. So what is to deal with a loss like that, and how can I use photography trying to express the different feelings and experience that I had from the moment I got the news that my father had killed himself. And so many times I invite people to work with me. So I did a project with people that had suicide in their families as well. So I share my experience and ask people to share the experience with me. And then we create images that can become metaphors for the feelings or emotions that we had. And I also use photography in another large scale project that's called, in English, it's called Trails, Traces and Vestiges, if you translate from Portuguese, in which I investigate facts of Brazilian history that happened before the invention of photography. So they are all from the 19th century. And I chose two revolutions and effects related to the history of art in Brazil. And I do straight photography in all those cases, trying to capture how these facts still reverberate in the present. So many times I come from the point where personal emotions or experience are very complex, and we try to understand the world, so we create a narrative, and that also happens in historical facts where they're very complex, and then we create a narrative to be able to understand the present, but also we reduce a lot the complexity of everything.
You described two elements of your work. The first element, when you're talking about educational classes, there's a collectivity there, which I think is very striking, but also this group project that you described about people who have had loss in their families. There's a collectivity. Both of those things speak to the last point that you were talking about, which is making meaning of the world. And photography in terms of assuring or defining a context that is collectively understood around those images, it can be assisting in that process of making a meaning. And so I would just ask you about that, because I think that in this particular moment in the world, that meaning making outside of American hegemony is important, because we're not benefiting collectively the earth on an ecological level, but also us as people around the world don't benefit from a sort of hegemonic meaning, right? And so those spaces of collectivity in the arts, I think, are important in terms of people finding other meanings of experience. And thankfully, Brazil is a reference point where we do see different meanings and understandings of how society should function, governance, collective understanding.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, and I've been discussing with one of my students that has, he works in the government in the São Paulo city, right? And the government or the mayor, well, I don't know how to say that, but he works in the House of Representatives of São Paulo. and how we could maybe turn photo books into something that is used in schools to teach people how to read complex narratives of images and try to understand more what's been fed to them all the time via social media and everything. You know, when people come to study with me, they sometimes they come with very personal stories they want to turn into an art project. And the whole work we do is how to find the common ground in the work, right? It's not only about them, but it's how we can use that to share something in society. And then when I work with Brazilian history, it's more about seeing what's been left behind, what is not in the main narrative, you know, the vestiges of something else, and also trying to help people understand how everything is just a built narrative, right? So facts happen, but there are so many of them, and then there's this consensus of the powerful narrative that just go over everything and says that's what happened, you know? But that's, I think the internet and social media have become a place where they're using it all the time to just like push their agendas, right? So I think in Brazil, even though the right is still very powerful here, you know, you have a country that they almost got it there again last time, you know, and it's very hard. I think, you know, what is hard for me to think and try to come up with a solution is that how can we, using the tools that control by the people in power, can make the other narratives spread, right? Because, for instance, I use Instagram as a way helping me selling my courses, you know, showing, promoting the kind of work I do. But if I could, I wouldn't be there whatsoever, you know, because it's a horrible platform, you know, it's like, you just see ads all the time. They manipulate the algorithm so much. So sometimes I do feel that we have to try to find a different way of making our ideas go around, you know, because we cannot be attached to the tools of the people that are just oppressing everyone anyway, you know. But how can we find these other tools, and how can we have resources to create them, you know? One of the things that I think is more important in my life now are the days where I can just leave my phone somewhere else and just not look at it, because it became just a tool of controlling time, right? I don't know if I answered you. I just went in a different path maybe, but this is something that I think a lot. You know, I just bought a book by a German group against the idea of work the way we do it, you know, about the necessity of working in this kind of format that we have now, you know. And also I was reading a book by a British psychologist on giving up, it's not giving, the translation wouldn't be giving up, but it's about not, I've been thinking a lot, Stefan, I would really like to hear you on that too. It's about giving up this way of living, you know. It's not even just like fighting. It's not quite quitting as well. It's a different thing. I couldn't get my head around it properly. But it's when we just give up these tools. They are like kind of making us believe that really cool and nice and help us work, and also it's just working a different way. It's finding different ways of connecting, finding different ways of surviving, finding different ways of making a living without being attached to this kind of system that we know doesn't work. And that also works for the art world, right? It's just been there, right? It's just like, what is the art world if not connected to the super rich, to, you know, to the whole system? So how can we be artists and also make a living? And I have this idea that in a world that I believe no one would just be an artist full time, you know, We all have to contribute somewhere else, like teaching, building, growing food and stuff, and also being artists, because the idea of an artist, that artist 24/7 and just make a living from that is too much connected to the idea that we need someone that has enough money to buy that. I don't know if you agree with that, but I think a lot about that. Well, how artists, how can we change the way we make a living and can still be artists, but not connected just to the super rich?
One term that I've been hearing people in Brazil mention is digital sovereignty, right? And this idea of other ecosystems of communication, which I think is also being echoed in different parts of the world. And I think this is important just to respond to your point about how we communicate. The physicality of a lot of your work, whether it's in education or also bringing people into physical spaces where you're sharing printed material, the relationship to an image and the sort of social encounter around an image, it creates a different condition because there's a sort of shared experience there. Maybe you could just highlight a few of the recent exhibitions you've worked on, maybe one that speaks to your work and also just the fact that you've chosen to share that in a public setting and why.
Well, I was part of an exhibition that happened at Ocupação 9 de Julho. That happened. Let me just check the dates here because it's been a while. Let me see. It happened. 2023. It's called Refundação. And I had three, it was a group show. And I also, I really think group shows are better than solo shows, you know, because you have different works connected and it can create different meaning. I mean, I had some solo shows and in that context I liked them. But I think Refundação was an exhibition that had many different layers that were very interesting because it happened in Ocupação 9 de Julho. Do you know it? Yeah. How would you explain that in English?
So we're talking about a space of a former public building in downtown Sao Paulo that has been occupied by people demanding housing justice, the occupation of July 9th, it's called, where there's an art gallery space within that occupation of the building. But thank you for mentioning it. Please go ahead.
Yeah, and they create, the idea of having an art gallery there was a way of putting objects there that were really valuable. So that would prevent the police when breaking in, because in Brazil, if they try to reclaim the building and if they break things that belong to the people that are living there, they have to pay for it. So if you have an artwork that's very expensive, so some big names in Brazilian art donate works to be there, you know. So some of them donated, they were sold, and then the money stayed for the Ocupação. So they created this, that was the second exhibition there, where they invited like hundreds of artists from different backgrounds, different areas, different kinds of work. They weren't all just like top contemporary artists, you know. They mixed several different types of works. And that was something that was very pleasant to be part, because it felt more like the real world, you know. The building is a bit derelict, so wasn't a perfect gallery, you know. And I think the artworks were alive there because all the social context, you know, so everything was very meaningful. And then after that, this exhibition was taken to a museum that is in Ouro Preto. Ouro Preto is a town in the countryside of Minas Gerais, where they found, I think, the largest amount of gold in Brazil in the 18th and 19th century. The gold went to Portugal, right? And it's a museum that is interesting because it's supposed to be a historical museum, but because they don't have many artifacts from... It's called Museu da Inconfidência. Inconfidencia was an upheaval that happened there against the empire, you know. But there's not many documents or objects related to that. So in a way, it's a museum that has more like furniture and, you know, it's kind of the museum of how people lived in the 18th and 19th century. But it's a museum that the right likes because it kind of tells a story, a part of Brazilian history that they kind of attach it to. You know, there's this hero of the Brazilian history called Tiradentes, and there's lots of religious images there, you know, because it was a very religious place, so there are lots of saints and things. And then they took this exhibition, the museum director is a new director and he's trying to change the museum. He's doing an amazing work trying to turn it into a museum that questions Brazilian history. You know, he comes from a philosophy background. He used to teach philosophy in the university in Brasilia, but then he applied, he got the job to become the director of this museum, and he's changing everything. So one thing he did was to take this exhibition from Ocupação 9 de Julho to the museum, to occupy the museum and to be mixed of with these objects from the 19th century and things, and became a very interesting exhibition. And then was a lot of protest against it from the conservative movement, you know, saying, oh, they're destroying the museum, what are they doing, you know, because they add in this work close to these sacred images and stuff. So these were two exhibitions that I was really happy to take part in. And I also had a solo show in Belém, in the north, that was 2024. And I took, it was a solo show about cabanagem. Cabanagem is my work that I did there in Belém. Cabanagem is the largest revolution that ever happened in Brazil, you know, with the largest numbers of dead, around 30,000 people were murdered by the imperial army. And when they rebelled, they killed the governor of the state. This is very unusual in Brazilian history. You know, they took over power. They seized power for a year in the capital, and then the imperial government spent 5 years chasing the revolutionaries in the Amazon jungle and killed them. You know, the soldiers would come back to Belém with necklace of ears. They would cut off people they killed, just to prove how many people they killed, you know. And cabanagem is a known story in the region, but it's not known in the rest of Brazil. So I made a book in 2015 where I visited places that had a connection to the history of cabanagem, where battles happened or where people were kept prisoners and things like that, you know, or cemeteries where people are buried and the farm that belonged to one of the leaders of the revolution. And I just saw. What I do when I do projects like that is that I do a lot of research. I interview people, historians, economists to understand. I read several books and I come up with a list of possible images, ways of connecting the past with the present. And then I go to these places and then I see what's there, and then the images happen at the time when I get there. It's not that I can think about an image. I can know that I should go somewhere to see what is there. And that became a book, a photo book. It's actually two photo books and a small newspaper that come inside an envelope, like a document envelope. And there's no captions for the pictures of the place I go, so it's about forgetting as well. So every picture has a connection to the history of cabanagem, but I don't say what's the connection. But I have captions for the portraits, which are in the smaller book. And I was invited by the Bienal das Amazonas, Amazon Biennial. They have it's a lovely institution that was created by Livia Conduru, who's an amazing person who's just like doing everything without any support from the governments of the state. So she managed to raise funds and do an amazing work there. They're having the second biennial this year. And I did it last year where I was like in between biennials. They have other exhibitions happening. And that was really interesting because it was the first time I was able to show these photographs there. And the curator decided not to have like a regular show with like large prints as I do, but to have this kind of cloud of images in the room. And then also to have my work in dialogue with works from artists from Belém that touched in the same subject. So it's interesting that in a way they call it like a solo show because it was like my work was the main work, but actually it was a group show with two other artists and also a coin from the time. So it was like an object that would connect direct from the past. There was a coin created by the Cabanos, by the revolutionaries, no, for their government. And that was something that was very pleasing to do, you know, just like to be there, to talk to people. When I do exhibitions, I like to stay several days in the room and talk to people that come in and discuss the work and see how they can relate to the work, you know, if they like it, if they see what is there, what you know. So I think that's it.
Well, as I imagined, without the details, what you've shared does open up possibilities to understand different experiences and worlds and collective encounters, both in the past and also related to your work as an educator and photographer, but also in terms of unpacking mainstream understandings of history of Brazil. And I think for people to sort of understand and think about how what you've shared can also open questions about their own respective environments and political histories, but also thinking about how artistic practices can be a mechanism or sort of like a medium through which to explore these things. It's really lovely to speak to you today. Thank you so much.
Yes, it's a pleasure.
That was a conversation with Brazilian photographer André Penchado for Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Kristoff. Thanks for tuning in. We broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Stefan Kristoff, and we'll be with you next week.